Granthadat Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 15, Lord Krishna's Description of Mystic Yoga Perfections. And today we will begin with text number 12. Paramano maye chittam bhutanam maye ranjayan kala sukshma arthatam yogi lakhimanam avapnuyat paramano maye chittam Bhutanam mayaranjanen kala sukshmarthatam yogi lakhimanam avapnuyat paramanu maye chittam bhutanam mayaranjanen kala sukshmarthatam yogi Lakhimanam avapnuyat Paramanu maye chittam Bhutanam mayaranjayan Kala sukshmarthatam yogi Lakhimanam avapnuyat Paramanu maye chittam Bhutanam mayaranjayan Kala sukshmarthatam yogi Lakhimanam avapnuyat Paramanu maye chittam mayaranjayan Kala sukshmarthatam yogi Lakhimanam avapnuyat Paramanu maye In the form of atoms Chittam Consciousness Bhutanam Of the material elements Maye In me Ranjayan, attaching, kala, of time, sukshna, subtle, arthatam, being the substance, yogi, the yogi, lakhimanam, the mystic perfection of lakhima, avapnuyat, may obtain. Translation. I exist within everything, and I'm therefore the essence of the atomic constituents of material elements. By attaching his mind to me in this form, the yogi may achieve the perfection called lakhima, by which he realizes the subtle atomic substance of time. Please repeat. I exist within everything.
I exist within everything.
And I am therefore the essence,
of the atomic constituents
of material elements.
By attaching his mind to me in this form,
the yogi may achieve
the perfection called lakhima.
By which he realizes the subtle atomic substance of time. Purport. Srimad Bhagavatam elaborately explains that kala, or time, is the transcendental form of the Lord that moves the material world. Since the five gross elements are composed of atoms, the atomic particles are the subtle substance or manifestation of the movements of time. More subtle than time is the personality of God Himself, who expands His potency as the time factor. By understanding all these things clearly, the yogi obtains lakhima siddhi, or the power to make himself lighter than the lightest. Om jnana timirantasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurunmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namah. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Karamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guruho Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Purana Sindho Inavandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kant Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripasindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Paramanu Maye Chittam Bhutana Maye Ranjayan Kala Sukshmarthatam Yogi Lakhimano Bhaknuyat. We hear quite often that Krishna is the time factor. We also hear that time is conspicuous by its absence in the spiritual world. So does that mean that Krishna is absent from the spiritual world?
Yes.
Time factor is a little difficult to understand. It's the most subtle thing. So here he's saying that if one understands the subtlety of the time factor, kala sukshmarthatam, lakhimanam avapnuyat, you can understand, or you can attain, rather, the mystic perfection of making yourself lighter than the lightest, for what that's worth. One time in Haridwar, I saw a big crowd of people standing near the Ganga, and I went to see what it was. So there was a yogi, and he was able to take an empty Limca bottle and go like this, and reduce it to a pile of powder, and then pour it out on the ground. So Lakhima Siddhi, here it's stated, there are 18 such perfections. There are different categories. They're not totally consistent. The 8 primary mystic perfections, 10 minor mystic perfections. So these things automatically come when you become very focused. Focus. How do we say focus in Sanskrit? Dhyana. Dhyana means focus. So one yogi gave this analogy that the sun's rays are dissipated throughout the sky. All you have to do is collect them in one place, so let's say through a magnifying lens, and then through the focus of the energy that's already there, you get mystic power. You can burn down half the state of California. It happens every summer. Some of it is arson, some of it is natural, but once it starts burning, there's not much that they can do about it. Every summer, the state of California calls in the fire departments from the entire western half of the United States to try to put out these wildfires. Some of them are not wild. Some of them are quite deliberately set, because if you stay in Los Angeles long enough, you basically go crazy. So there are people who do this on purpose. That is to say, they light the fires on purpose. They don't go crazy on purpose. Going crazy is just a natural concomitant result of kusanga, bad association, which is basically all that's available in Southern California. So they're not offering any yajna there, so Agni Dev has to come and eat up whatever he wants. That's another thing. So how does it happen, actually? We don't really understand the time factor. We were talking about this yesterday in Delaware, one devotee and I. Time factor is a very mysterious thing, how it works. It's a fact. There is no time in the spiritual world. Time is the Lord in the form of his subtle energy, as it says here in the purport. And it's based on atomic theory, atomism. There are several of six classical Vedic philosophies that put a lot of weight in atomism, Paramanuvada. We call it atomic theory in modern physics, but the idea is that atoms are actually doing everything, and it's true. So the time factor, there is no time in any world, actually. We're always eternal, and this world is also eternal, but things come and go in this world. This is an artificial device that is invented by Krishna to adjust the attitudes of the conditioned souls who require attitude adjustment. And the agency of this school of hard knocks is Maya Devi. She's the headmistress of the school of hard knocks. So what are the hard knocks? Everything that we get attached to in this world. Here the word is used, ranjayan. Ranjayan means to cling on to or to try to enjoy. Bhutana maya ranjayan. We try to enjoy the bhutas. Bhutas means either the living beings or the things that are created. Because when you're a jiva, you're created as such at some point, at least in this world. Jiva bhuta sanatana. So bhuta means also a spiritual being, it means also material being. But here we're talking about the five gross elements and the other subtle elements as well. All of them are measured. This is the point. The key word is measurement. They're all measured by time. And time itself is measured by the movement of atoms. So if a yogi understands the subtlety of the time factor, then he also understands that this whole cosmic manifestation is going on the basis of Paramanu. Paramanu means the supremely small thing, in other words, atoms. And by this understanding, the yogi can actually attain, through focus of his attention and intelligence and discipline, he can actually attain so many others as well, but in this verse it's particularly mentioned, Laghima Siddhi. If you want to become more light than the lightest, why would you want to become lighter than the lightest?
You can travel to other planets, mentioned in the Bhagavatam.
You can travel to other planets. You can escape. Because this is what we do in this material. There's only two things that we do in this world. Either we try to exploit the energies of the Lord, the Bhutas, as we've been describing here. And when we become Sahajiyas, sometimes we're Sahajiyas. So then we also try to exploit the Lord directly. But this is one half of the equation. We try to exploit either the Lord or his living beings or his material elements or he himself. But we're exploitive.
This is the thing. And then, because invariably this makes a mess and we have to suffer as a result, then we need to escape the mess that we ourselves have created. And sometimes if you get yourself into a sticky place where you're surrounded by enemies, it would be nice to be as light as a feather, because then the wind will just pick you up and take you far away. So somebody might want this kind of siddhi, lakima siddhi. Or as you said, you know, we can go to other planets. So in this way, this chapter is delineating all 18 of them. 8 major perfections and 10 subtle perfections. Actually, a pure devotee can do all these things. You want to name someone that you know who can do this? Okay, that's what I thought you would say. So, you may have noticed, it's very rare to find such a pure devotee. But they generally don't exhibit these powers anyways. Sometimes they do. Certainly, there are many who will attest that Srila Prabhupada was able to read people's minds. That's another mystic perfection. It's one of the minor perfections. But it can be useful at times. So people get attracted by these things, and they misuse their power of focus by wasting their human form of life in chasing after these illusory pleasures. Because what is the difference? What is the real benefit? Even if you get some mystic perfection like this, then what is the benefit? You're still going to die. And where are you going after you die? You're going wherever those desires take you. In India, everybody wants to come to America. There's a temple outside of Hyderabad near Golconda. It's called Visa Balaji. You know, do you know about this? Have you been there?
No.
If you talk to any Telugu person in the United States who's come here within the last 10 years or so, you will find that this person has been to Chilakuru, the village there where this Visa Balaji deity is worshipped. I first went there in 2004. Somebody just took me there as a novelty. And it's a little temple out. You wouldn't even know it's a temple. It's just a small little building way out in the middle of nowhere. But once you get inside, you can find that there's a substantial crowd inside, and they're all circumambulating the deity. The idea is that if you circumambulate enough times, and if you pray with focus enough, remember focus? What does focus mean in Sanskrit? Dhyana. Then Visa Balaji will be pleased to bestow upon you your visa to America. So, fine. It's interesting. So then somehow or other I was passing through the same neighborhood about 2 years ago, so they said, let's go see Visa Balaji. Okay, why not? This time we had trouble getting into the place because a whole town had sprung up around the temple. And there's a square mile wide parking lot full of buses from all over South India. Hundreds and thousands of people are very eagerly queuing up, you know, all the way from this parking lot to the temple, and there's a whole bazaar has sprung up around the temple. You know how they have in temple towns, they're selling, you know, nowadays they sell all kinds of nonsense toys as well, but it used to be they would sell japa beads and puja paraphernalia, this kind of thing. So anyway, we found that Visa Balaji had increased in his popularity because in fact he is giving out visas. Why is he giving out visas to so many people? That is hard to say. The Lord has his own purposes. But I have noticed in the recent years that there is definitely a Telugu invasion of North America. And these people are coming to ISKCON because they're thinking they're going to escape. This is what we're talking about. The tendency to exploit and the tendency to escape. They're both at play here. We're trying to exploit the Lord's resources, which are comparatively numerous in some sense in the United States. And we're trying to escape India. Just like in India nowadays, if you can find anyone who can possibly avoid speaking his matribhasha, his mother tongue, he will do that. It doesn't matter what language it is. Everybody wants to speak English. Everybody wants to forget about being Indian. I went to the biggest mall in the capital city of India. And there was a store that had maps of every single country in the world. So I had an old map of India. It was getting worn out, so I thought I should get a new map. So I asked them for a map of India, the Indian subcontinent. And they said, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have a map of India. In the capital city of India, in the biggest mall in that city, stocked with every country in the world but not India, because they don't want to be Indians. This is not a new tendency, actually. If you studied history, you can observe that since the days of the Shakas, even, that's the Greeks. When did the Shakas come? Maybe 300 something. Long, long time ago. Indians have been conscious imitators of the status culture of the day. It seems to be about status or something like that. Anyway, so Visa Balaji gives out these visas, and he's got his own plan, because they're thinking they're going to escape India and escape Dharma and escape Vishnu. Now I've seen, if you take a taxi from Vrindavan to Delhi, he'll probably take you through Sohana and Gurgaon, because if you try to go on the national highway, it will take long, long time because of traffic jams. So if you go through Gurgaon, Gurgaon is now an up-and-coming IT hub, one of several in South Asia. And you'll find that there are whole subdivisions that have been created there, and they look like nothing so much as Orange County, California. And they even have the same kind of names that you get in Orange County, California. For example, Flower Valley, Central Park, Sun Village, absolutely nothing to do with God. And this is the intention. They would like, you know, escaping India actually means escaping Vishnu, because Vishnu pervades traditional Indian culture. That's why they're working very hard to erase traditional Indian culture. It's basically envy. So they're thinking that they're going to exploit the Lord's Bhutas, Bhutanam Maya Ranjayan. But when they get to America, after having gotten the blessings of Visa Balaji in the form of their H-1, then they meet the devotees who give them a Bhagavad Gita as it is. Hare Krishna, remember me? I gave you your visa. This is what it's for. So I've seen this all over North America in recent years. And Telugu people are nice, they're just misled. Anyway, that's too much dilation on this topic. The point is that we try to exploit the Lord's creation, we try to evade the Lord's authority or that of his representatives more often than not. So this is what we do in the material world. And these things are available, all these 18 mystic siddhis, they're actually available to help you do that, if that's your intention. If you want to forget about Krishna, matta smrti jnanam apovanam cha. He will help. So here, become lighter than the lightest, featherweight, or some of the other ones. You can, as we said, you can become smaller than the smallest, you can become bigger than the biggest, you can do so many things. You can procure things from a distant place, you can control another person. Wouldn't that be fun? So we may become attracted by these things, because actually, these are things that fulfill the purposes for which we've come here. We've all come here to the material world only to exploit Krishna's things or to evade Krishna's authority. And these mystic powers, they give you extra special advantage in doing that. Of course, nowadays, because the demoniac propensities are more prominent in human society or in quasi-human society, therefore people don't really care so much. It's too much hard work, actually. And it's a little too dharmic as well. So we don't care about yoga anymore. We can just, through C++, we can do so many other things. Or we can, you know, anyway, we exploit God's creation in so many godless ways. And it's a lot cheaper, it's a lot faster, and it burns out easier as well. That's the downside that we haven't realized yet. Sustainable civilization, this is a very common idea nowadays. But only when you follow things that are dharmic, then you can actually sustain your position in this material world, if in fact that's what you want to do. We're living in a society where less than 5% of the population is destroying more than half of the resources. And there's so much garbage in this world. There's a big island floating in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. You know about this? How many square acres is it? It's like
3,000 miles. It's twice the size of Texas.
Garbage. All the world's garbage is floating in the middle of the ocean. And as if that weren't enough, there's a great danger now for everybody who's launching private or government-funded satellites as well. Because there's traffic in outer space now as well. And these things, once you put them out there, well, our engineers didn't figure out how to get them out. So they're all just floating around. There's about maybe 3,000 tons of space garbage floating there. And it's a real liability for these rockets that the NASA people are putting out there, because those things are hurtling around the Earth at like 1,000 miles an hour, and they're just going to go right through the aluminum walls or the titanium walls of these spaceships that we send out there. So it's a great liability. They're worried about it. But they're not that worried about it because they keep putting these things up there. Just like global warming, we're not too worried about that either. In fact, you may have heard already that Vladimir Putin is already making big plans for the North Pole, because that's going to be prime real estate within the next half century. See, that you can't burn out a person who's hell-bent, for lack of a better term, on trying to exploit the Lord's creation. When the heart is that sick, and when the intelligence is that perverted, there's nothing you can do to stop them. They misuse their focus in exactly the same way that Bill Gates did. He was practically in samadhi. And any of these guys who are very powerful by mundane estimation, they're using their sense of concentration, just like the yogis traditionally did as well. At least the yogis got a place in the Srimad Bhagavatam here. Krishna's mentioning it. Because it's better than nothing. It's being carried out. The nefarious purpose of exploiting or evading the Lord's authority is being carried out under the auspices of Vedic sanction to some degree. So at least there's some benefit there. But nowadays, the people are more, they prefer atheistic mode of existence. And it's not sustainable. So the world is really, really getting into a big mess pretty fast. And World War III, they're not calling it that, but it's already going on, because wars are not military anymore so much. But we'll see where it ends up. It's very interesting. But the main thing is where we end up. So what do we want to use our power of focus on? The power of focus is meant really only for Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And when we chant Hare Krishna with all of our power and all of our sincerity, whatever we can muster, then we actually go somewhere. But nowhere in the material world. You get nothing out of this process here. There's no karma involved, there's no jnana involved. You only get bhakti, and therefore many people, once they figure that out, they leave, or they stop, or they come every Sunday only, or something like that. So this is the thing. Do you want love, or do you want something else? Most of us want something else. So these are a few things we can think about. I didn't have any time to study this verse, so I don't know what the commentator is saying about it. But really, the whole chapter, all these mystic perfections, they're just distractions. We should call them mystic distractions. Not that anybody's really serious about them, because, you know, we've got cheaper and easier ways of doing things that work for a while. But the point is that we should use our power of concentration and focus on cultivating purity of heart through chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and trying to erase the cause of rebirth in this material world, which is a conditional mindset. Material desires, the essential endeavor to try to compete with God or evade God. So I'm going to stop here, but if anybody has any questions or any comments, we can discuss. Narottam.
Thank you. Thanks for jumping up here and speaking. My question has to do with the principle of the conservation of energy. So both scientists and Buddhists, they discuss this concept that everything's, there's this materialistic reductionism that everything's broken down ultimately to atoms and subatomic particles, and they exist eternally. And Buddhists go so far as to use that as a philosophical, foundation for the idea that there's no necessity of a creator.
Or a soul, for that matter.
Or a soul. So that was my question. When here we're discussing about the Lord being subtle, more subtle than atoms, but according to these philosophies and scientific research, they are discounting that the existence of the Lord based on that principle. So I just wanted to ask your rebuttal to that.
Well, there are different philosophies, as I mentioned, and about half of the six darshans, at least, they actually subscribe to this atomism without any need of God. That's why we don't accept in toto the teachings of, say, Karma Mimamsa or Nyaya or Vaisheshika. They really kind of buy into this materialistic worldview. So, but the purport here, it says very nicely, or actually it's in the verse itself. Krishna says, I am the essence of the atomic constituents of material elements. And Srila Prabhupada often says throughout his books as well that Krishna is within every atom. But Krishna is not a material thing, so certainly the physicists are never going to find Krishna in their microscopes. And the Buddhists are also never going to find him by speculating in the ways that they do, no matter how sophisticated those efforts become. Because if you sophisticate your effort enough, you can convince yourself and some others that it's actually of greater worth. But it's not, because the heart remains stone cold, and therefore the soul remains basically frustrated, unhappy. The real experience is Krishna, but Krishna doesn't reveal himself unless we actually surrender to him. So this is the process. We don't really have to understand everything, we just have to place our faith in the process, and we have to follow with that faith, and then Krishna will start reciprocating when we experience that directly, in a way that's beyond the senses, beyond the mind, beyond the intelligence, beyond the false ego. This is called, in philosophical language, sakshat brahmanubhuti, direct experience, or in Kantian terms it's called immediate experience, because immediate means not right away, but means it's not mediated by your senses. And otherwise, our only other options are the two that the Buddhists and the scientists employ, which is pratyaksha and anumana. They can't go further than that. But shabda praman can reveal things even if we don't fully understand them. But if we act on the instructions that we hear, then we do get the direct experience, but it's necessarily subjective. So that's what I would say. Maybe there's another way to deal with it. More mental way to deal with it. I don't know. You want to add something?
Yeah, I just wanted to make one comment. Is that when we were living in China, I was working with Professor Jinding Huan. He's still alive. He's an advisor for the Central Government of the Communist Party. But it was interesting. He had translated the Ramayana from Indian to Chinese, and we did a number of programs with him. And there was another professor at Beijing University who was in charge of their computer science department, And he became a devotee. Both of them, and one showed a tremendous interest, the other became a devotee. She was ready to do programs at their, one of their homes. And but the particular professor in charge of the computer science lab, he came up with an essay using physics that proved the existence of the soul and the super soul. And he's presented it to the different professors from the universities across China, and he said nobody could refute it. So it seems that from his research that there is some type of information that actually establishes these teachings in a way that at least they can't refute.
Yeah, and there's more than that as well. What is his name? He wrote the Tattva Chintamani, which is a Vaisheshika text. And that is also another materialistic attempt, atomistic attempt to prove that there's God. So, you know, for people who accept that much authority only, then these texts may be useful. But ultimately we have to understand that because the absolute truth is Achintya Bheda Bheda, there's no argument that you can establish that cannot be disproven. This is essential to recognize this. Because anything we say, either in or out of Krishna consciousness, can also be countered within the same system. This is the point. And so this is why, if you heard the class last night, we were mentioning from Prabhupada's purport on Bhagavad Gita 4.10, some people just get completely flustered by this fact. And they give up the search for the absolute truth altogether because they can see there's only contradiction in all directions. So the only way out of the contradiction forever is to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. But that's so simple, who will believe it? Especially if he's a highly paid scientist with years of degrees behind him and so much prestige at stake. Who's going to do this? But the proof of the pudding is in the eating. It's as simple as that. You can write essays about the jar of honey, you can photograph it from every angle, you can x-ray it, you can interview people who work with honey, you can study how the bees, everything you can do. But you don't really know honey until you open the jar and eat it. So this is all the simple thing. Even little Saraswati, she was probably very proud. She can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a big nuclear physicist. He's not willing to do it. But she's willing to accept, you see. It has to come to this point. There's no mental way or intellectual way to get there. The path of Anuman dries up at a certain point.
I'm not sure she's got a question.
Okay.
But maybe later, you know, this idea that every argument is refutable, you know, it seems that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was able to establish this Bhagavad philosophy as an irrefutable way.
The irrefutable way is to emphasize the Achintya Shakti, which is what I'm doing. Cannot understand. And if you read the Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami, they're coming out now, you will see that this is his keystone argument. It has to be accepted. And Prabhupada also emphasized this to Swarup Damodar in his morning walks in Venice Beach in the 1970s. Without Achintya Shakti, you can have no concept of God. And even within the realm of Vedanta philosophy, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is considered to be the mature and comprehensive synthesis of all that had gone before. Kevaladvaita of Shankaracharya is one-sided. Madhvacharya's pure dualism is also one-sided. Vallabhacharya's monism is also one-sided. Nimbarka is much better. Ramanujacharya is also better. But neither of those two acharyas emphasize the Achintya Shakti, and that is the whole point. The Achintya Shakti is the thing. Once a person accepts that I can't figure it out, then he surrenders, bohunam janmananamte, jnanavan mampapadyate, and he chants. And when you chant, then Krishna swayameva spurati, he reveals himself. Okay.
Thank you.
That's what I remember.
This whole concept of time, and so that's what's available to us. We know that most people have this concern about at various different levels about how time is acting on them and how one can utilize time for for whatever it might be. Especially within the devotee circles, to see that I'm using my time to work so that I can, at some point of time, retire and spend my time in preaching the glories of Krishna. So, it's similar to the words, essentially. There is the siddhis that are attained, but it is done through the medium of understanding and utilizing time. Mm-hmm. But it almost seems to be a never-ending thing that you achieve something that will allow you to then utilize and devote or focus your time purely in the chanting and the preaching activities.
The best motivation. It's not maybe the most common motivation, but it is the best. Yeah. So your question?
And the question is, it almost seems as you never get there.
Well, that's why these other processes are considered to be superior, because they actually work. The problem is that in Kali Yuga, we have polluted the environment on every level so much that it's very difficult to do anything. And it doesn't matter whether you're looking at this biologically, economically, politically, religiously, socially, psychologically, however you want to look at it. You know, the world is in such a screwed up state that it's very difficult to actually do anything successful, because everything is haywire. This is the nature of Kali Yuga. But one thing that always works is to cry out, "Help!" And then the Lord comes. Very simple thing. This is the principle. It's too simple for most people because they don't want to bow down. Therefore, Boy George wrote that famous song, "Bow down, mister."
I just saw it on Facebook.
So, this is the point. Krishna is only asking for four easy things, Prabhupada says all the time. Think about me, become my devotee, bow down and worship me. But people are not ready to surrender their ego. They're too puffed up and they're too attached to this unattainable goal of trying to compete with him or trying to evade his authority. You see? Is that answering your question? I mean, I could sense there's maybe half a dozen other questions embedded in this. But if...
It does, to a large extent. It's sad to see that it's disheartening, let's just say, to see that it will never end. The aspiration to come to a point where one can dedicate one's time fully in the service of Krishna.
That's part of what it means to say that we don't have a sustainable civilization. It was put very nicely by His Holiness Devamrita Swami. He gave a class a year or two ago in Los Angeles, and he said, you know, he took a poll of the audience, and he said, you know, how many people think that human life is a process in which we learn certain lessons and then we move on into the next life? And everybody's raising their hand, yeah, that sounds pretty good. And then he says, no, it's not. He said, it's just a process of being distracted by one dead end after another. And this is how Maya catches us, life after life after life. You don't learn anything here. You're not supposed to learn anything here. You're only supposed to be wasting your time. He just totally blasted everyone in the room like a machine gun. So, you know, but there's truth in what he's saying. And, you know, Maya is like dangling this carrot in front of us that just, what you're describing is what they used to call many years ago, the X plus one syndrome. Have you heard of that? So, you know, this just one more year and then I'll have it together, and then it never happens. You have to do it right now. The only time is now. That when we get out of time concept, then we realize that there's only now. So that is the progress, key to progress, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, is to act now. And don't dream about the future, don't lament for the past, just do it now. And anybody can do this now, because it's so simple. Hare Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna. So easy thing. But, you know, because we don't want God, we're looking for some atheistic thing, and we hyper-sophisticate that to impress everybody, including ourselves. Or we just, you know, hundreds and billions of dollars we put into something, and we convince ourselves that maybe that's substantial. But all of it is going to vaporize in due course of time. It all has no meaning whatsoever. When everybody in your family dies, then you get a sense of what's happening. I lost 2 siblings in the last 6 months. One is my twin brother. So it gives you a little sense of perspective about what's happening in this world. There's nothing left. Where'd they go? Everything gone. All the love, all the hate, all the fights, all the wonderful, everything gone. See, the whole world is only ending up in that way. Therefore, Krishna says, Mateshu Gamate Bhutta. The smart people don't invest in that. It's a bad investment. Adi Anta Vanta Kanteya. These things have a beginning and they have an end. They're bound by time. But they only bind those who refuse to accept that there is no time by chanting Hare Krishna now. Then you're out of time. Okay, we're just kind of rambling now. Is that okay?
Yes.
Satisfactory? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Put it out of
Prabhu Ki. Yeah. Lord Bhakti Ki.